what's this? I mean, is this somebody's idea of trying to let me know? Just because I went a little over. Okay. Speaking of time, next Sunday starts two services. When's the first service start?
9.
And the second service?
11.
All right. Okay. So you all affirm that. All right. So this is a center update with Dr. Gary, an opportunity for me to share a little bit about what goes on behind the scenes, things aren't so evident with just coming on Sundays. And so last Sunday I mentioned that when I'm gone, which happens a few times a year, I usually go and travel and teach other ministry leaders, other Unity and CSL ministry leaders, how to avoid what's happening, what's a phenomenon now in New Thought, and that is 9 out of 10 New Thought churches are in decline. So we're one of the 10% that are moving in a different direction, largely in part because our effort is to move to shift the cultural dynamic from minister-centric, where the identity of the church typically is in the context of who the minister is, to a mission-centric, a paradigm of ministry, where the intention is that we come together to fulfill a purpose that lives transcendent to whoever the minister is. So independent of who are the spiritual leaders, we're seeking to cultivate a church identity and culture that is about making a difference in our community. And towards that end, shifting culture is perhaps one of the most difficult things to affect, especially in the short term. It takes 3 to 5 years to change culture. And so in part, as when Jane and I were hired here, we were given a 5-year contract to make sure that we had all the time that we needed in order to be able to accomplish this purpose. And one of the challenges of fulfilling a purpose such as cultural change is that, especially with New Thought people, with Unity people, it's like herding cats. Right? I mean, isn't it typical that we sometimes think of ourselves as cats? You know, one of the things we hate about religion is that it's organized. You know, so we like the idea of being free spirits and not very organized. The challenge is that that works against really shifting culture. And so I want to just point that out with a little movie. This is dim the lights for this.
This man right here is my great grandfather. He's the first cat herder in our family.
Herding cats. Don't let anybody tell you it's easy.
Anybody can herd cattle. Holding together 10,000 half-wild short hairs, well, that's another thing altogether.
Being a cat herder is probably about the toughest thing I think I've ever done.
I got this one this morning right here, and if you look at his face, it's just ripped to shreds, you know?
You see the movies, you hear the stories, I'm living a dream. Not everyone can do what we do.
I wouldn't do nothing else.
It ain't an easy job, but when you bring a herd into town and you ain't lost a one of them, ain't a feeling like it in the world.
So part of my expertise is that I know how to herd cats. And so part of shifting culture is about shifting the energetic field around which our identity and our purpose arises. And so part of shifting the field is about creating a tipping point, a collective consciousness tipping point, where we are all of a sudden finding ourselves in alignment with the single purpose. And so so to give you an example of what that's like, I have another video clip that shows a process by which metronomes, you're familiar with metronomes? There's little things that go tick, 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 tick. I've never seen one over here, but apparently it's not needed. It's the inner metronome that is inspiring our music team. So if you can imagine 32 metronomes happening differently, and all of a sudden there is a force that's exerted that brings them all into coherence. So I want to illustrate that right now. And this is a 5-minute movie that's speeded up, so it just happens in less than 2 minutes. So see what happens. skipped about 2 minutes. And now they're almost all in sync. Looks like we have a holdout over here. That could be Joyce Tucker. I'm not sure. I hope she's not here today. Okay, good. Yeah, still holding out. That's the Wild Women. They'll do that. Uh-oh, looks what happens. So by virtue of our coming together and doing some things together, such as the Q process, such as spirit groups, and as we unfold new activities where we're all doing the same thing, all of a sudden there becomes this field of energy that's coherent. And when we establish a collective, coherent consciousness, we create tipping points within the organization where we become something. We enter into a new way of being, of expressing, that brings us into a greater expression of our purpose. And so, in a sense, everything that Jane and I are doing that move the community into a collective community practice is our way of shifting the energetic field so that we can, in turn, move our ministry forward and be one of the 10% that are thriving instead of in decline. So that's the center update, and we'll get timely started with the rest of our program. Thank you.
So let's take a few minutes in meditation. So I invite you to put down anything that you might be holding, and let's just take a few minutes to turn inward. And if you're new to meditation, it's nothing more than just getting quiet and focusing consciously, inwardly, and just relaxing. Getting in touch with the sense of the divine within. So we breathe in. We just breathe. And the very breath is the flow of life and light and energy. We breathe in and that life and light and energy, it fills us. It calms us. And more than anything, that breath of God, it just reminds us It reminds us that I am. I am. I am filled with the light of God, and I am. I am filled with the sweetness and the kindness and the love of God. And I am. And we are reminded of our wholeness in spite of appearances, in spite of physical ailments that might be going on, in spite even the drama that goes on in our life, I am whole and I'm perfect I'm the light of God. We are so much more than our human consciousness permits us to realize. We are the breath of God flowing through us, and yet at the same time, it is us. And we rest with that knowing. We are. I am. So let's just take that in the silence for a moment. And let's just let that be. I am the wholeness of God. Spirit of God, just remind me. Help me remember that I am one with the Spirit of God. Help me remember that I am. And so it is. Thank you, God. Amen.
Almost gave it away. Not quite. We have no clue as to what that might be. All right. So, well, that's moved. That's okay. So I gotta say something based upon what I said last week, which won't happen much more often because we're going to two services, and typically when I have the 9 o'clock service, I also have the 11 o'clock service to correct anything I said at the earlier service that might have triggered some folks. Well, last Sunday, the story I made up about you, many of you, was that the vintage people in our congregation might have difficulty comprehending quantum science. And that was a story I made up. Okay, I forgot to say that when I introduced that comment, but I just want to rephrase that, and that is, I apologize for such an assumption, and I stand corrected. Because many of our vintage members gave me feedback with respect to that comment. So that's it. All right, let's synchronize our watches. So this has been a series, Making Your Mind Matter. It's a series that I've been doing. My talks are for the purpose of moving us sequentially to getting to a place where we understand the dynamics associated with how we create our personal reality. I mean, that's our third foundation principle in Unity, is that through our thoughts and our beliefs and how we are being with what we're having, we co-create whatever we're experiencing in our life. And we agree. We all said, yes, that's what we believe. That's what we practice. And yet, that's the last thing that we really do when it comes to dealing with the challenges of our life. Look at our thoughts and our beliefs and how we're being with our experience. We tend instead to try to manage the discomforts of our life by trying to have things be a certain way in the context of what we're having as our life experience. And then it becomes quite a challenge to manage our external experience because we're basically reacting to it as if it's against us. And whenever we have someone or something against us, we are in a kind of different creative way with our experience. We're creating out of our own disconnect, and that exacerbates the whole problem. And so over the last several months, I've been wanting to explain that conundrum and how we move towards spiritual practices as a way in which we can instead focus on what is arising within us as evidence of how we're being with the moment. And if what's arising within us is some sense of discomfort, well, there's likely a belief underlying that discomfort, a belief that really points to what we believe might be true about us, such as we're not good enough, or we're unlovable, or we're unworthy, or we're not adequate. You know what I'm talking about, right? So there's aspects of ourself that really underlie how our experience looks and feels. And so when I'm being with my experience out of some sense that's not the truth of me, my experience has to expose that disconnect. That's just principle. That's just how it works. And so it makes no sense for us to try to manage our life experience by trying to fix the external, but rather to get clear with respect to what's happening within ourselves so that we can look at a belief that might not be the truth of us and address that instead. Because ultimately where we're going with all this is getting to a place where we can manifest our desired life, a life that serves us. Isn't that what we all really want to be able to do, is to be able to take our thoughts and our beliefs and align them with principles so that we can manifest an abundant, healthy, fulfilled life? I mean, that's where we're going with this. Yes, and last Sunday we looked at the observer effect, which basically is, I could have just had this one slide instead of giving you all that stuff I did last Sunday. But I got to explain that my higher self, my almost higher self, was doing the talk, not me. And, you know, in that other realm, there's no time, and so, you know, so on and so forth. So we're not going to let that happen today, that's for sure. So there's not going to be any channeling, any inspired presence happening through me. Sorry, you're just going to get me just as I am today, right now. Okay, so with that said, we're going to be moving into a conversation about a phenomenon that can be described as our body-mind. And you'll remember a few Sundays ago, I talked about a conundrum that I was having with respect to my new body. You know, I healed myself in a very short period of time of very serious illness and discovered that through the healing of my body, it began to have difficulty with my current mind. In other words, my body was upset with how my current mind was trying to recondition it back into being the old former self that my body was before I got sick. And my new body would not have anything to do with that. So I got to tell you, since then, since that conversation, in my own mind, I've just sent my body off and my mind off to get some counseling, because obviously it's a stuck place. And so I've asked for some help to illustrate the phenomenon of that experience of my body getting and my mind getting some support through this dilemma. Please welcome our Unity Transformational Players.
Thank you both for coming in. Have a seat, yes. I see I have your file here. I see we have mind and body. Yeah. How can I help you?
We are simply not getting along.
Mm.
I feel like we're sabotaging each other.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And how long has this been going on?
Oh, it feels like for my whole life.
My whole life. My whole life.
Did you have something to say, body?
Well, yeah. Why is she sitting there saying, my whole life? It's our life. You got that, big thinker? Our life?
Do you see what I have to put up with? I am shackled to this body who rejects every good thing that I have to say and every good thing I try to do.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And can you give me an example?
Oh, you bet your sweet bippy I can. I want to feel more drive and more energy in my body, but this body here simply wants to sit in front of the TV and eat pizza.
Hmm. Oh,
Well, and who drove us to the store to get the pizza in the first place? And who turned on the TV? Well, yeah, I ate the pizza. It was there. And I turned on the TV because somebody just had to watch American Ninja Warrior and sit around and whine, why can't I have a body like that? Oh, I could do that. Well, not with your attitude, you can't.
And how does that make you feel when you hear mine saying that this is mostly your fault?
Well, I'm only trying
Don't tell me. Tell mine.
All right. Look, reptilian brain. I am just a manifestation of your choices on body and health. I'm a printout on your ideas and thoughts about body and mind. And you know, I'm not too keen on your choices. You know, I look in the mirror, I don't even recognize myself anymore.
Oh, come on. You are on autopilot, and you do things by cellular memory. And frankly, you short-circuit every good goal that I come up with. I mean, I know I've made some bad choices, I get it, but I really want to do things better, and frankly, you are dragging me down.
Big talker here. You know, mind here wanted to go work out and whip me back into shape. Well, and I was willing, but Miss Madam Frontal Cortex couldn't even last 2 minutes in the gym.
Well, if you weren't so busy talking to all the well-built hunks in the gym, we might have had some results.
I think we both had a hand in that one.
Well, it sounds like you both have some work to do, but here's the key issue. You are in this together, and right now there is a great disconnect between you mind and you body. You need to both function together more consciously. Body reflects the choices that you've made about eating and health and exercise, mind. And mind is greatly affected by the way you feel, body.
Well, the body could do more, you know.
I only do what I'm directed to do, hypothalamus breath.
Now, look, you're both going to need to stop with the sarcasm. You are undermining each other. You need to support one another.
Oh, that's dumb. We're two separate entities. Hey, where did you find this therapist anyway?
I don't know. But, you know, maybe he does have something. Maybe I do need to think more positively so it would affect you more positively. I do need you, and I do love you.
Oh, mind, you are so smart, and you say the sweetest things. You know, I don't always understand why you have those deep thoughts about me like you do, but I need you too. And I love you too.
All right, yeah. Now this is an excellent start. Now I'm very proud of you both. Now I want you to go home. I want you to both consciously think about working together. And I am going to call you by a new name, Body Mind. Okay, that's your new name. Body mind, all right? So you can go ahead and go. Go. And don't forget to pay on your way out.
I like that body mind.
No, it might be mind body.
Oh,
mind body.
Body mind.
No, mind is superior.
All right. Okay, so thank you. Apparently so. Yes. So here we have, a sense that sometimes our mind and our body can be at odds with each other. And for me, experiencing what it's like to really have a gift of a brand new body and yet recognize that if it's subjected to the same mind that got it sick, you can imagine what the issue is. And so it's in part us acknowledging how our thoughts can affect our body and that relationship, because it's symbiotic and because there's really no place where the body leaves off and the mind begins and vice versa. We have to really acknowledge the dynamic of body-mind as being a part of what either draws us into greater consciousness, awareness, or causes us to fall back asleep. And source our well-being or our discomfort, either how the body is being or how we are having our life. And so, in a sense, our body just simply tries to achieve whatever is the predominant state of being that our body-mind is demonstrating. So if our brain is a believing machine and it seeks to gather evidence to fulfill its perspective, our body simply replicates that dynamic of translating that belief into some form of physical presence. And so if we believe in the glass half empty, then our body is going to demonstrate a half empty presence with respect to how it is showing up in our life. I've got a couple more clips that help us unpack the science, especially the brain science and its relationship to how the brain and the body are connected, and the challenge that connection creates when we're trying to break free of what has become a habit of being. In other words, if our body participates in the habits that we become, then it's a dynamic that really is very complex that we have to unravel. Let's see how it goes with this next video. See what you think.
Whenever you make your brain work in a certain way, that's called mind. Mind is the brain in action. So as you remind yourself every day who you think you are, you're causing your brain to fire in the exact same ways. And as they fire and wire in the same patterns over time, the brain moves into a very finite signature, and that's called your personality. Now, that box in your brain isn't literally a box, but it's the most commonly wired, neurologically fired programs that run redundantly because we keep doing the same things over and over again. Now, your personality creates your personal reality. That's it. It's that simple. And your personality is made up of how you think, how you act, and how you feel. So the present personality who's sitting here today, you, has created the present personal reality called your life. Would you agree? Would you also agree then if you wanted to create a new personal reality that on a fundamental level you would have to change the thoughts that you are thinking, the behaviors and habits that you're demonstrating, and the emotions that you've memorized that's become part of your identity? And most people try to create a new personal reality as the same personality, and it never works. We have to become somebody else.
So in effect, what Dr. Joe Dispenza is trying to explain is that because we're living and being in the habit of being whoever we are, that it's very difficult, even if we have the conscious desire to move towards some preferred desire good, to overcome the inertia of our body-mind living in its self-sustained reality. And so as we understand the phenomenon of how our thoughts and actions and feelings create our state of being or the habit of how we be with what we're having, we can become aware of the ways of being that don't serve us. And indeed, this is an important step in the transformational process, is first being able to bear witness to those habits of being that aren't serving us, and remember the observer effect, that whatever we bear witness to, not only do we change it, but we are changed ourselves. So by the mere act of us acknowledging that there are ways that I be with whatever I'm having that aren't working for me, can you notice those things in your life? To notice what is not working for you is important, because it's important for you to see the link between a life that's not working and the beliefs and the thoughts and the ways of being that are behind it. Because absent of seeing the causal aspect of how what we have comes into being, the causal aspect being our habitual thoughts and our habitual feelings and the ways in which we perpetuate those states by creating habits of being with whatever is going on, then when we're able to connect those dots, then all of a sudden we begin to say, well, what if I want a different way of life? What if I want a different experience of life? Well, then the challenge is that we have to shift or change our habit of being. We have to break the habit of being our former self and move into a different way of being that constitutes a new set of thoughts that give rise to a new set of actions that create their own sense of behaviors and feelings so that we ultimately begin to unleash a different personal reality based upon a different context out of which we're collapsing the field of infinite possibilities, if you remember last week's talk. So this is what we're trying to understand, is how can I take whatever I have right now, which is my habit of being, and recognize that it's not working for me, and understand that if I'm going to improve my life, if I'm going to transform my life, I have to create a different habit of being, then what we need to understand is how our habits of being come into being, are formed, and are sustained, and to begin to practice ways of being that serve us as opposed to trying to work against the experiences of life that seem to be less than satisfying. When we recognize the experience of our less than satisfying life is given rise to our ways of being in our life, then we stop trying to fix what's happening in the outer and begin to look at what's happening on the inside, because life happens from the inside out. And so let's continue with this understanding. If we can acknowledge that we create a personal reality by virtue of how we're being with what we're having, that creates the cascade of body-mind dynamic that ultimately locks us into a way of being with what we're having. If we understand that that's the system, then we have to work with the system in order to eclipse the system or to transcend it.
Every time you have a thought, you make a chemical. And if you have a great thought or an unlimited thought or a joyful thought, you turn on a set of circuits in your brain that fires in a very specific sequence, pattern, and combination that produces a level of mind that turns on another part of the brain that makes a chemical for you to begin to feel exactly the way you were just thinking, great or unlimited or joyful. Now, if you have a negative thought or an unhappy thought or a self-depreciating thought, you turn on a different set of circuits and a different combination, a different sequence, and a different pattern that produces a different level of mind. And the brain then begins to make a different batch of chemicals that signals the body for you to begin to feel exactly the way you were just thinking, negative or unhappy or unworthy. So the moment you begin to feel the way you think, because the brain is in constant communication with your body, you begin to think the way you feel, which makes more chemicals for you to feel the way you think. And then you think the way you feel, and then you feel the way you think, and then you think the way you feel. And some people do this for 20 or 30 or 40 years. Now, the redundancy of that cycle over time creates what I call a state of being. And a state of being is when your mind and body are working together, or your thoughts and feelings are aligned to a concept. So thoughts are the language of the brain, and feelings are the language of the body. And as people get caught in this cycle of thinking and feeling and thinking, over time, they condition their body to memorize that emotion as well as the conscious mind. And whenever the body knows as well as the mind, that's called a habit. A habit is when your body is the mind. Now, 95% of who you are by the time you're 35 years old is a set of memorized behaviors, set of emotional reactions, beliefs, perceptions, attitudes that run just like a computer program. So 5% of your conscious mind begins to work against 95% of what you've memorized. So the person wants to think positively, but they're feeling negatively. They want to create their dream board, you know, and put up their future life, but they feel unworthy. That's mind and body in opposition. We have to recondition the body to a new mind. So how many people here know someone who's memorized suffering? Doesn't have to be you. It could be anybody.
So what a way to end the little clip. How many of you know of somebody who's memorized suffering? You know, how many of you know of somebody who's memorized lack or memorized, you know, not good enough or memorized guilt or shame? You know, we know people are trapped in those memorized body-mind dynamics and searching for a way out, searching for a way through. And while we tend to try to cope because most of the world believes that what it has is its reality as opposed to how we're being with what we're having creates our reality. And so the world sort of shares with our or empathize with our remorse and regret because, yes, indeed, it sucks to be us when we have memorized the emotions of separation, of less than, of not good enough. And yet, in order for us to break free of that cycle, we have to learn what that cycle is and how it lives in us so that we can understand how our body mind is sustaining a way of being that isn't necessarily what we want. And so our effort now is to begin to develop a practice so that we can first align with the system, because it's a system that we have to work with, and ultimately evolve it so that we get to a healthier place. And so as we look at the patterns of our being that we have memorized to lock us into predictable future, then we have to begin to identify states of being that would unleash us into a desired future. And most of the time, we don't necessarily move into that discernment process because we're so caught up in just trying to manage the slings and arrows of our life, trying to dodge those things. And so if we really believe in principle that our personal reality, our experience of what we're having is somehow influenced, if not created by our thoughts and how we're being with our experience, then it makes sense that we refrain from trying to manage our discomforts and our well-being by in dealing with what we're having, but rather looking at the very system itself that produces those effects in our life so that we can evolve how we're co-creating our personal reality. Now, does that not make sense? Okay, so our challenge then is, you know, how do we transform our lives when 95% of us of what we are is unconscious, and that runs us for the most part. And so that's the challenge. And while it seems to be a daunting challenge, it's not impossible to work with. As a matter of fact, the people who have become masters at manifesting have all done the same kind of, have gone through the same kind of journey. The first step is that we have to make conscious those aspects of ourself that are underlying the patterns of our being that aren't working for us. So in other words, we have to become conscious of the limiting beliefs that we possess that are running us, especially when we're not aware, when we're not awake, when we're not conscious. And so how many of you have been through the Q process? Raise your hand. A lot of people, if you look around, the majority of people in this church have been through that process because it's a tool that helps you begin to notice the limiting beliefs that aren't the truth of you, that run you, that the little boy or little girl inside of you still carries as if it's the truth of them. And if there's some aspect of yourself that is operating in the belief, in the mistaken belief, that its sense of not enough is the truth of them, then it's going to manifest not enough all the time. And we all, those of us who've been through the Q process, know that principle. And so to the degree that you begin to become aware of what's running you, just to be able to notice, okay, right now as I look at my checkbook, I'm dealing with a sense of not enough in relationship to my bills. You can know that that not enough is really connected to little Gary's sense of not enough. And so just in seeing that, I can back away from my money issues as being the source of my discomfort and recognizing, no, it's my sense of not enough that's the problem. And it begins to disentangle from the operating system that is sort of running. And little bit by little bit, the sense of not enough has less influence with respect to how I'm being with those moments when I'm having to either give or pay a bill or whatever it is. So it helps me begin to change my habit of being with whatever is drawing me into the question, do I have enough? Because it always translates at some inner level as to whether or not I am enough or not. So the second part is that we have to also create coherent states of being. As Dr. Joe mentioned, that when our head and our body are in alignment, that creates a habit of being, and that's a very coherent, powerful thing. And the problem is that our habits of being have become unconscious. And so what if we begin to learn how to create a habit of being that is a link to a desired future? And then pour our energy into sustaining that coherent attitude of being, that coherent way of being, and beginning to see how that plays out in terms of creating a life that we want. So our challenge is that when we get into the next two talks I'm going to be doing, the next talk is going to be on quantum, and more on quantum science, since. My story about the Vintage Congregation is totally made up. I'm just going to bring it on, okay? You're going to get a quantum science talk that you've never had before, only because we got to really understand that as a part of how we're going to manifest a greater reality. But the important part of this process is that when we get to October 2nd, you need to remember that date, October 2nd, that's the Sunday I'm going to be speaking, and that's when I'm going to lay out in very explicit detail how each one of us can manifest a more specific and beneficial good in our life, whether it be healing or prosperity or whatever it is. So you don't want to miss what date? That's right, and you have two shots to get there, it's 9 and 11. All right, we're just going to wrap this up, and I'm going to be done on time. I know. That's because I wouldn't let my higher self in. All right. So this is our goal. Our goal is to create coherent states of being aligned with a felt sense of some desired future sufficient enough to convince our brains into believing that the desired future is happening now. Okay, so this is the goal. We're going to come up with, each of us in our own way is going to come up with a state of being in relationship to whatever desired good that we want to manifest in our life in such a way is that we have a felt sense that this desired good is already happening, so we convince our brain so that our body memorizes those feelings so that it can become and embody that state of being. And then we'll talk about a meditation practice that can sustain that state of being over time. So that's our plan. The last thing I'm going to say is that with respect to being able to intervene in this whole dynamic, all the things that we talked about today, looking at the body and the mind, it's challenged to find a kind of symbiotic relationship that works well. All of these things can be enhanced in terms of our being able to work through these principles if we just begin to observe what is running us. So your assignment this next few weeks is to become very conscious and interested and curious with respect to what is running you. In other words, why do you do the things that you do? And being able to have some insight as to what's behind that. And not that you're going to do anything about it, but that you're simply going to acknowledge, oh, I'm being run now by my need to be right. I wonder what's up with that. What's underlying that? Right now I'm running, I'm being run by this need to be busy all the time. And why is it that I can't just be with this moment instead of having to come up with something else to do? There's all kinds of ways in which we be with whatever's going on to try to either mitigate the discomfort that we're experiencing or otherwise numb ourselves out. So just begin to observe those things. And as you observe those things, your awareness of those dynamics in your life will begin to loosen their effect in running you without you knowing it. And then at least if you know that you're going to make something not enough, you do that on purpose. God bless you all. Thank you so much.